Hey, hockey heads, get ready for the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Each game day, answer four questions. Pick the winning team, guess if points will be over or under, predict the first goal, and choose the highest scoring period. Daily winners snag gift cards, while each round champs pocket cold, hard cash. Play now at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess. It's fast, it's fun, and it's all about hockey. Let's go!
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Can you see it? Did you know this?
Checked, but the puck comes right to Pettersson, who tries a back pass for Besser. In with a shot, he scores!
A moment's notice. Adams leaves the puck.
To the line, Hughes scores!
In this existence.
You're listening to Canucks Conversation.
Quinn Hughes beat reporter here. Like, I don't cover the Canucks. Yeah. I cover Quinn Hughes and what he's doing to the Canucks.
A member of the Nation Network of Podcasts and delivered by DoorDash.
Just wave the guy and get Demko involved. I wanted him in Valentine's Day.
Wow. We should do a radio show together. Right on. I want to fist bump you right now.
What our house.
Pearl steals, cutting in, shoots, scores!
Public display is ambushing me.
They slay the dragon.
He lives existence.
Don't waste all the good stuff on the off air. Let's go.
Hello, Canucks fans, and welcome back to another episode of the Canucks Conversation, brought to you by the great folks at Zephyr Epic. Use promo code HOCKEYSEASON, capital H, capital S, all one word. That will get you $5 off your order at ZephyrEpic.com, Z-E-P-H-Y-R, Epic, on all platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, Instagram. They've got all the social medias. Go give them a follow. Also, check out their retail location in Surrey, and folks, our promo code works there too. You go, you tell them Canucks Convo sent you, and you say you're using promo code HOCKEYSEASON, capital H, capital S, all one word, or you can play this part of the podcast if you'd like for the clerk or whatever you call the person, the cashier, whoever's helping you at
Card salesman.
All the friendly folks at Zephyr Epic, go check them out. Retail location in Surrey. The best part about Zephyr Epic, though, they ship free anywhere in Canada on any order over $50. From
Tawasin, home of the Montanas, to Tisdale, Saskatchewan.
Home of, go ahead.
Brent Butt will be joining us here on the show. BB on Canucks as well on Twitter, as you can find him. But let's get to Tisdale, Saskatchewan. Quads, the grain handling center of the region. Tisdale, Saskatchewan.
Is that all you have?
No. Population, 3,180. And here's another fun fact about Tisdale. The world's second largest honeybee statue in the world. That twice, world, but you get what I'm saying. The second largest honey bee statue in the world. How big do you think it is? It's the second biggest in the world.
I wonder if
how Brent, tall do you think it is?
I wonder if Brent knows about Quilly Willy in Porcupine Plain.
We'll talk about anyways.
We're gonna have a lot of Saskatchewan talk.
Are we?
Do you want to know something funny?
Yeah, I'm just going to go through my pages of Saskatchewan towns and ask all these weird random facts.
Something funny that we have to show Brent this because he's not in studio yet. He will be in about half an hour and we'll talk soon with him. But I thought growing up, you know, seeing Corner Gas on CBC and everything, I used to think Dog River was a real place. Dog River is the place on Corner Gas, obviously. And I thought that was a real place in Saskatchewan.
Well, you know what? It sort of is. Tisdale used to be called Doghide.
No.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know this.
They changed names for some reason. I don't know. But the river's still called Doghide River. That's the river that goes through Tisdale. Just about to get to that for you here, Quads. But how tall is the second tallest honeybee? Take a shot in the dark. Second tallest honeybee statue in the world.
5.5 meters.
I don't know. It's 6'11". So just...
Okay, so like 3 meters.
A little bit taller than Tyler Myers. Myers, stand by this thing. Doesn't even look that big.
No, not 3 meters. How much is a meter? Why do I not know this?
I don't know. Anyways, that's the second largest. You want to know the largest? It's in Alberta, in a place called Falher, Alberta. This honeybee statue makes the second largest one look like a... It's like Connor Garland and Tyler Myers. The second largest one is 6'11". The largest one in Falher, Alberta, 22'8".
Get out. See, that's like big more like 5.5 meters.
Yeah, that's around, yeah, give or take. And Tisdale, Saskatchewan, home of the most picturesque nine-hole golf course in Saskatchewan. And it's on the Doghide River. So it's not like Corner Gas. It's not. So it's pretty much based where Brent is from.
We'll have to ask him when he gets in studio. Doghide I almost want to like stop it here and just show him this and just pick up from here when he gets here because we're super excited to have Brent Budd on. Like I said, Saskatchewan royalty. It's going to be a lot of fun. But Chris, before we get to that, we have to give a shout out to our friends at DoorDash who we are delivered by. We're also delivered by the great folks at DoorDash.
Ding dong.
Use promo code ConvoDD.
Or as Wyatt says, ding dong.
So I'm assuming you listened to the episode.
I did listen to the episode.
All right, hang on a second. ConvoDD is our promo code, capital C, capital D's. Use it to get 25% off and free delivery on your first order with the DoorDash app. Doesn't get much better than that, folks. My name is David Quadrelli. I'm joined, as always, by the man who built the place, Chris Faber. I'm sorry to anybody who listens to the podcast on 1.5 speed or whatever it is you do, because you probably didn't hear any of that. But you already know what I was going to say. So I'm joined once again by the man who built the place, Chris Faber. And you listened to the episode with Wyatt,
yeah,
so go ahead.
At first, you know, I got to say this crap about DoorDash here. I know the sponsor, great sponsor, DoorDash. But you go on there right now, you got the Summer of Dash Pass going on. 50% off Burger King. So our promo code, throw it out the window. Go on there right now. You just use the Summer of DoorDash, 50% off.
Well, hang on, because use our promo code if you're a new user, right? Because sure. Yep. Then you get whatever you want, right?
Yep.
And then you get that Burger King deal after.
The next
you can
day.
Use that at any time. But if you have a new account or you're making a new account on DoorDash, use promo code ConvoDD.
Get yourself a Whopper, no onion, no tomato.
There you go.
Remember, you and I went out for Burger King once.
Yeah.
So I tell you, Burger King's been surprising people of late.
Have they?
Well, for a while, they were in the dumpster. But now Burger King's coming back. They got chicken sandwiches are better. Anyways, you and I, we went and had it. We had a good Whopper that one time. It was good.
We did, and then we went to Value Village.
Value Village, we were shopping for... you were looking for... I remember now, it was before Halloween. You were looking for the Rock costume. This is back when, back when you were working out. Now you're not working out anymore.
I'm back now. I went to the gym yesterday.
Could have fooled me.
Got a little pump. Got a little pump yesterday. Okay. Well, tell you what.
All right. Let's... 10 minutes? Oh, you can cut it short here. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. How was your vacation?
It was good. Yeah, I guess people maybe can tell. Is my voice not great? I can't tell. In my head, it sounds fine. But I think listening back a couple times, I've heard, it doesn't sound the greatest. So
we've also got a new Patreon for our Patreon supporters.
It's true. I talk about, I was on a houseboat on the weekend.
Yeah,
so,
and you talked about that a lot more. So we won't waste too much time because, you know, we want to get to Brent Budd. Sure. We've got a big episode here. But patreon.com/CanucksConvo. That is what you need to check out. And the $5 and $10
made her debut.
She did. $5 and $10 tiers get you all the bonus content, including the one that we just did, where we threw around the idea. I believe it was your fiance that brought it up and said that her and my girlfriend should do a podcast together where they talk about what it's like to be in a relationship with kind of the two of us, if you think about it.
The Wags episode, yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, there's been times where your girlfriend will see that we're out for lunch. She's like, I thought you were working. And you're like, this is working.
Yeah, those are business lunches. I tell her all the time, keep the receipts, a business lunch. Even if, I don't know what you do with the receipts after, but I keep the receipts and call it a business lunch.
Yeah, so that was an idea we threw out on the Patreon. And yeah, like you said, my girlfriend made her on-air debut on the Patreon.
But saying what the worst part of our jobs are.
Yeah, because you brought up what your fiance thinks is the worst part, and we got it from the horse's mouth with my girlfriend.
Yeah, I wouldn't call her that, but...
yeah, she probably wouldn't appreciate that.
Anyways.
Jump into it here. Want to talk a little hockey before we get Brent Butt on?
Yeah, we can do a little bit here. We got a little bit of time, and then... Because we're going to just go... I don't know how this conversation is going to go with...
no clue.
It'll be fun, though.
Yeah, it'll be fun. Okay, the reverse retro.
Brent, I'm curious to see how he became a Canucks fan. We'll chat about it anyways.
Yeah, we'll chat about it.
Let's do some recent news, whatever you
really
got here.
Really quick here. The reverse retros, they got leaked, and it's been confirmed by multiple sources. You know, it got confirmed specifically to Canucks Army as well. Like, I've confirmed it. Those are the real deal, but I think it's still a fake of that jersey, but they have the idea right. There might be some tweaks to it. Like, I think one thing that's being discussed a lot is the letter and the number is going to be on the front, because it's like the 1960s Canucks jersey that is being kind of reversed, if that makes sense. So that's what they're going with. And I find it interesting because you have mixed reviews. Like, some people really like it. Like, some people are huge fans of Johnny Canuck, and they're like, this is a great jersey. And then there's others who are saying, this color scheme sucks. I even saw one person who said, and again, I need to specify, this was one person I saw that was like, that blue and green is better than the current blue and green we use. Shout out Malcolm. It was Malcolm on Twitter that said that. But yeah, like, some people really like it. Some people really hate it. Where do you stand on this?
I think I like the look of it. I do kind of agree. I like the just the look of the color, and I think this is one where, you know, some jerseys, like, they're like, oh, you got to see in person for it to look better. Like, I think that the reigning jersey or whatever they call it with the stick and rank that they currently have, like, that jersey looks better in person. I think this one is actually going to look even better in person, because I like that little bit of, like, a real dark navy color, and I think it looks good with a darker green as well. So I think it's going to pop. I like the piping on the elbows. I think that looks nice. Like, I just think that part of the jersey is great. And I'm not, like, the biggest Johnny Canuck fan, because, like, to me, there's not, like, I don't really know the history exactly of the Canucks. Like, I didn't grow up with that being part of, like, my childhood watching it. I still have always wanted to see, like, them go back to, like, I'd love to see, like, the black Orca jersey.
Did you just say it wasn't part of my childhood to watch the Canucks in 1960?
Yeah, like, sorry, it wasn't. Like, I don't know the Johnny Canuck jersey. I didn't grow up with it, but I always thought it would be nice to see the black, you know, West Coast Express era jerseys, or even, you know, mix in a little bit of that maroon color in there. Like, I think having some fun with that jersey would be great, because it's not one that we see often mixed with the Canucks. Like, you can, if you want to see Johnny Canuck, go out to Abbotsford, right? Like, you know, that's going to be out there. But I'm not like torn apart by this jersey. I think it's going to be fine. I think it'll be good. I think hopefully it has better luck for the Canucks than the Sprite can did, because that wasn't a good time, and I don't think we'll ever see that jersey again. I don't know what to do with my Nate Schmidt Sprite can jersey now. I don't know what I'm going to do with that.
Yeah, 0-4 with the Sprite can jerseys.
Yeah.
The lost 2021 season.
Most definitely. But I think it's good. I don't think, I hope it's one that, like, even pops more when you see it in person for the first time, because I do think, like, that's the thing about the reverse retro jerseys is, man, you get a real chance to, like, when those players take the ice for the first time and warm up, that's when you know if the jersey's good or not. You get to see a real good pop from that. And the Canucks had some options to go with some, you know, go back with the red and yellow and have some fun with that, because everybody loves that, obviously. But to not go that direction, to go this direction, you better hope that they pop when they hit the ice. And I think they will. They look like the type of jerseys that are going to pop a little bit. And, yeah, I'm cool with the Johnny Canuck. It just doesn't do it for me like it would just getting, like, the West Coast Express there, or even the Flying Skate a little bit. But I don't think we're going to have to complain about the Flying Skate. I get a feeling we're going to see the black Flying Skate jersey a lot next year. Probably a lot more than we'll see the reverse retro.
Yeah, I hope so. And we've heard whispers about that, but I don't think it's been confirmed anywhere. I haven't even been able to get it confirmed. And I was, not to pat myself on the back a little too much here, but remember at the end of the year, I got the scoop that they were wearing the black skate.
Oh, I thought you were going to go about your nearly kneel here, your insider, with the guy that your insider at Canucks giving you the nearly kneel schedule.
No, that's a completely different person. I've got my nearly kneel insider, and I've got my jersey insider.
Oh, your sauces.
Those are my two insiders at the organization.
Yeah, a couple good sauces there.
Yeah.
All right. You want to get to Brent here?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's chat Canucks with Brent Butt.
Also, we're sponsored by Montana's now. Our Get Montana's Messy
All right.
guest of the day, Brent Butt.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard. But thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Before we go any further into the episode, we have to give a quick shout-out to our friends at Montana's. Montana's is the barbecue expert in Canada. They smoke their ribs in-house every day, and then they sauce and fire-grill them to order. Montana's legendary all-you-can-eat ribs promotion is on now, 7 days a week until the end of summer. Come in for all-you-can-eat ribs and get Montana's messy to win weekly prizes. Chris, do you have a little Montana story for us?
I tell you, go get the apple butter barbecue sauce, the best sauce they got there. And listen, the ribs are great. Do the all-you-can-eat ribs. But if you're not in the mood for ribs, four cheese spin dip. They got an incredible spinach dip in Montana's. You know it. And you can find the barbecue sauce at the store as well. Take home a bottle with you.
There you
apple,
go.
Apple butter barbecue. Excellent stuff.
So be sure to go visit Montana's, where they have certified smoke and grill masters doing all of the barbecuing, with 7 locations throughout British Columbia.
Shout out Nanaimo.
Including Nanaimo, British Columbia, Langley, Tawasin, Prince George, Victoria, Fort St. John, and Kelowna. Be sure to go check out Montana's Barbecue and Bar today. All right, guys. Very pleased to be joined now. You've been waiting for this moment. Brent Butt, Canucks fan, joining us in studio. Brent, how are you, sir?
I'm good. I'm all right. How are you, fellas?
We're doing fantastic. It's a pretty hot day.
To overhear you guys arguing about who was going to introduce me. And I couldn't tell if because one of you wanted to or neither of you wanted to.
No, I think, well, if my voice, you've heard my voice, Brent.
I don't know what you think is wrong with your voice. It's a husky, manly, you know, it sounds like you're like a gravelly. Mm. I don't know what kind of voice you're looking for.
Yeah, like maybe I'll go for that. I'll just go on a houseboat every weekend for the rest of my life. And that'll be the theme of the pod now.
You got the voice of a pro wrestler.
Yeah. Apparently I look like one too. Did you see the Kevin Owens when he showed up and surprised Bruce Boudreaux? I've told if I, you know, shed a couple pounds, I could be the Kevin Owens.
Boudreaux's reaction was so great. He became a 6-year-old kid.
Yeah.
In the span of a millisecond, he became, oh wow. Golly gee whiz. He was like, it was so heartwarming to see that reaction.
Okay, well, let's actually start there, because it's on our list of things to talk about. But the Boudreaux bump, what's your whole take on that situation? When Bruce Boudreaux came in, how the Canucks turned around their season. Is that the real Canucks, in your opinion? Like, where does this team sit with you right now with Bruce Boudreaux behind the bench?
It's closer. I think the real Canucks team is closer to the team we saw in the last half of the season than it is to the team that we saw in the first half of the season. I think that, you know, it's... I don't know if we're going to go at that pace. I don't know what our pace was the second half of the season, the actual stats were, where we'd be on pace for like 120 points or something if we were going at that rate. But I think we're closer to that team under Boudreaux. And I think that, you know, anytime you get a new coach, there's a natural bump. But then you combine it with, this is a coach who really, historically, has an ability to look at his assets, say, what do I have? What's our best plan of attack considering what I have? And I think that's a big part of being a coach, is not just like, okay, here's the best way to play hockey. A big part of being a great coach at a high level is to say, this is how we play hockey with the tools that we have. And I think at times, Greener didn't have he either didn't have that capacity or he wasn't looking to go down that road to say, okay, I don't have the best team. It's not the deepest team. So we got to have to make some adjustments. He just kind of went with a, this is the best way to play hockey. Yeah. I think, but Boudreau, cagey veteran, was able to come in and change it up.
And it's going to be exciting because I think them adding a little bit here to the forward group has been kind of a strange thing for me because it's like, you know, Boudreau did so well with that group of guys and you're adding to that, like, Kuzmenko's coming in now, one of the top free agents coming from Russia. I've watched him play a ton. I know what he can bring. He's a skilled player. Mikheyev's another example, but it's like, I could feel that you could hear this from Jim Rutherford and from Bruce Boudreau that, like, the thing that needed to be addressed was the defense. And I think we both agree with this, that Oliver Ekman-Larsson, Tyler Myers, they surprised the hell out of us. We didn't think that that pairing was really going to work. But, man, did it ever play better than we thought? I just wondered, like, do you think this team's done in the offseason right now? Or do you think they're rolling in with this forward group that feels really deep, but a defense core that, man, it's not changing. Maybe Jack Rathbone comes and helps out a little bit, but there's really no other change.
Yeah, and I don't know what we're able to do. Like, smarter people than me have to figure this out. There's so many variables on the business side of hockey, but and there's no question that we need to shore it up somehow, that we don't have high-level defense right now. But I also think, as is the want in Canuck land, to grouse more than is necessary or accurate, right? the I often say the hardest part about being a Canucks fan is Canucks fans. Oh, they're hard to hang around sometimes, you know, because it's like they're the type of people that I always say if you're a typical Canucks fan, if they won the lottery, the main thing you'd hear is them complain about how there's no parking at the bank. You know, oh, I had to take the goddamn check to the bank and there's no park. And then the Pens aren't very good at the bank. Oh, come on. Like, yeah, but you just won $68 million. You know, isn't that all right? Yeah, but still, you know. So I think that, first of all, I'm kind of sad to see Hunt go. I was,
yeah.
He did way more than I expected of it. He was just so solid in like every regard for this guy who's like my height and the weight I would be if I was in shape, you know, to come in and he just surprised the hell out of me.
He was the just like the best guy to deal. Like, I always think of, like, when we go and we do these, you know, we sit down with them, we chat with the players. He was the only one who, like, always finished. Was like, thanks, guys. Appreciate you guys all so much. Like, everyone in the media, he's like, thank you. And we're like, why is he thanking us?
He's like, thanks for talking to me.
Like, he loved it. Like, if he ever got his name called to come out and speak, it was just like, he was loving it. Loving life. Local kid, too. Like, awesome stuff.
Yeah, it was a nice replacement for Nate Schmidt, I'd say. Because Nate Schmidt kind of brought that, you know, and we never got to meet him in person because it was all over Zoom that pandemic-affected year. But Nate Schmidt was always, you know, it always seemed like a good day with Nate Schmidt. Same vibe with Brad Hunt. So I agree with you there. That is
but I mean, just personality aside, putting him on the ice, I felt I had a high level of confidence in him out there. But yeah, it would be good if they were able to do some conniving and get the behind the scenes machinations to work out so that we can shore up the defense a little bit. But Do you think Rathbone will make the team? I'm looking forward to him because he's dynamic to watch.
Yeah.
He's fun to watch. So I'm there's part of me that's hoping he just steps in and helps out.
I think as a podcast that's had him on, I don't know what, like 6-7 times on the show.
So
one
times.
Of our favorite guests. I think one of the best people in hockey, just like as a genuine person, just incredible. And from what I got to see him in Abbotsford last year, I was out there all the time, you know, point per game defenseman, moves the puck really well, but had to work on the defensive things, right? Like, and I know that's, I don't know, to me, like, Rathbone last year, I always bring up the stats. I think it's incredible. When he was on the ice last year with the Canucks, his shooting percentage for the whole team when he was on the ice is under 2%. So, like, that's horrible luck. Like, the kid is in a spot where he makes a team out of camp, everything's going well, but the puck just doesn't go in. Like, you remember he had a disallowed goal early on in the season. I don't know how many crossbars they hit. I thought he should have been in the NHL last year. Like, I did. I understand there's, you know, the whatever it was with the call-ups, it made it kind of difficult. Yeah. You could only have four players called up. That made it a little bit difficult for him. But now you look at it with Rathbone, and it's like the left side. You know, we obviously have Quinn Hughes. You have OEL. Looks like Travis Dermott is probably one who, you know, I think Boudreau liked, I think, in the spot that he played in. Mm-hmm. So it's tough to me to find a spot for him, right? Well, still. And even with the loss of with Brad Hunt moving, Like, I don't see where Rathbone can fit on an opening six.
It has to be either Dermott or OEL is moving to the right side. Maybe both are moving to the right side because your defense group gets a lot stronger. And Jim Rutherford just spoke on the Bob McCown podcast, and he said, you know, Rathbone deserves to be in Vancouver this year. So we'll see how they put that plan into action. But you're right, Chris, to an extent, if you don't, you know, and to our knowledge, Dermott can play the right side. OEL is apparently training to play on the right side, but does an offseason make you able to play on that side? I don't know. So is there a spot for Rathbone?
Who's bringing this report of OEL playing the
I've
right side?
I've just heard it. I don't know.
Everybody, it's like, what's the...
Tajception.
LeVar Ball speaking into existence. Like, I think Canucks Twitter is like, what if he plays the right side? And then someone's like, is that a report? And then they just, you know, it's run into something.
Tajception.
I haven't seen this once. That I don't have any concrete evidence.
No, that's why I keep saying we've heard it.
Right.
Yeah, I've heard... I actually heard that one time in an argument. I'll never forget it. Two guys arguing. One person said something. They made a declaration. I can't remember what it was. And the other person said, I don't know if that's true. And he said, no, it is true. I heard it. That was his basis for it being true, was that it entered his ear canal. Yeah, no, it's true. I heard it.
You're getting into how we do things podcast.
That's how we do our information. But that's like the difference, because Quads is only 22 years old and I'm 29. Then the difference of us growing up on the playground was like they had Google on their phones at the time and I didn't. So like there was a lot of facts that I remember growing up learning that I was like, okay, this might be true. With everything with you, like you're like, oh no, like...
That's one of the things I notice about, like, I'm in the second half of my 50s now, and I have no concept of time. So, like, when somebody talks about, like, to me, the 1990s are still 10 years ago. You know, that's my window. I think of it as, like, being a last decade. We're in the, oh, no, but it's a hell of a long time ago now. So I have no frame of reference. I don't even know what I was. I probably already had a bad back by the time you were born.
You might be right.
I always think that's so weird to see, like, you see, like, a music, best of the decade, it's like the 2010s, and I'm like, yeah, but it's still...
Yeah, it's still the 2010s. Like,
that's one of the other great things, speaking of Bruce Boudreau coming into town, because when Travis Green came into town, he, for the first time, the Canucks had a coach that was younger than me, and I thought, well, this is it, I'll never be younger than the coach again, and then, boom, we got another, Bruce is older than I am. So
what do you think about the chance that first night, like, Bruce, there it is. Like, what are you thinking when you, because it was coming, I don't know if you're in the arena at the time or you're watching on TV, but like.
Watching on TV.
You could hear it through the screen and, you know, John and John let it breathe a little bit. Like, it was pretty unreal. What'd you think first night?
It felt like a little bit of magic was going on. Yeah. And it seemed to, and I kind of thought, okay, well, this is nice, but it's going, you know, it's not going to last like this. The honeymoon has to end, but it just kind of never did. And it it's a great combination because he's such a lovable guy. He's easy to like. And then he's clearly one of the smartest people in the room when it comes to hockey. And so that's a fantastic combination. So I think the players love him. The fans clearly love him. And I'm on board. That's what really matters. At the end of the day, the Aquilini family call me up. We have a little bit of a chin wag every year to see if I'm happy.
Yeah.
And I absolutely am. I think he's the man for the job, because like you said, we're not, you know, from a personnel standpoint, we're probably not exactly where we want to be. I think we're in better shape than most people would say or admit. I don't think we have the glaring gaps that some people seem to think we do, and the gaps that we do kind of have, we're in a situation where if we didn't have somebody like Demko, we would be in trouble. But Demko's the type of guy that can plug some gaps, especially when you're trying to you know, get your defense shored up. If you got some young guys that you got to bring into the mix and they make a couple of mistakes early, well, the fates decreed that at this time we would have a lights out goaltender, an all world goaltender, and so I think we're going to be all right.
Yeah. I know we're all a little bit biased, but where do you rank Thatcher Demko among the league stars? Like, I know he got a third place Vezina vote, finished seventh in voting. He was tied with a few other guys, but like, where do you rank Thatcher Demko in the league's goaltenders?
I think he's absolutely. I mean, anybody who thinks he's not top 10 is out of their mind, and I would put him like top 5. Probably 5. in the top five.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, and I'd say there's even an argument to be had that maybe he's a top three. If you, you know, look at the defense group in front of him compared to some of the guys that we would have on a list in front of him, obviously. But, yeah, like, you're right. They're in good hands with Thatcher Demko for years now.
Yeah, and like you say, he's a young guy, and we got to shore it up for an incredible value. Yeah. That, to me, that's the saving grace in all of this, is that we were able to lock up that goalie for that length of time at that dollar figure when we're really scrapping for nickels out there. That was a wonderful win. But he's also a young goalie. And goalies often don't hit their prime till they're 30, because so much of the game is so fast now that it almost becomes reflex and reaction. It is less a part of the game than smarts and system. And when you're 30 versus 22, you may be marginally slower, but you have vastly better sense of system and where to be and the smarts of the game. And so a lot of these guys, they don't even get as good as they can get till they're 30.
Brent, I got to ask, becoming a Canucks fan from Saskatchewan, we got to take it back a little bit here. Why Vancouver? What drew you in, and how long have you been a fan?
It's not like I had to abandon the Saskatchewan NHL team that I grew up loving.
You still wear your Rough Riders colors, I'm sure.
Sure. Football, I'm all in. Yeah. But so we didn't have a team in Saskatchewan. There was no NHL team. And so I kind of grew up, you know, I ended up cheering mostly for Toronto because it's like that's the team you saw the most on TV, mm-hmm. and you become most familiar with that team. And I was also always a big fan of Mike Pomintier. I have a soft spot in my heart for left-handed goalies. I don't know what it is.
Oh, that is not. That's what I hate the most.
I'm on board.
Right-handed catcher? No, I
got a soft spot because it almost seems like he shouldn't be there. That's a guy they pulled into the crowd from the crowd and threw him out there. He clearly doesn't know what he's doing. Home link. Look at the saves he's making them. Because there's just something awkward about it. And
oh, I hate it. It ruins everything for me about goaltending. I think it's like, because now the shooter, because it's like, well, to me, it's like even weirder than like a lefty pitcher in baseball where it throws you off, obviously. You flip in sides. But in hockey, it's so rare that like shooters, it should like really affect shooters and it should make it really difficult like a lefty pitcher does to a lefty batter in baseball. But it like, I don't know, it feels like there hasn't been like since Jose Theodore, that it's been like, how long has it been since we've seen a really good
high level
right catching goal? Yeah, right? Well, I feel like there has to be like a weakness to their game for some reason. I also hate them. I have like a shot on one.
Yeah,
one
I think
time.
A lot of them just got out of the game because they heard of your hatred for them.
Yeah.
A lot of youngsters. You've projected your hatred on a lot of youngsters. That's what I'm taking away from this.
Yeah, I have hated on goalies. Soul crushing,
demoralizing. Well, I'm an old goalie. I was a little fat goalie, you know. Growing up, fat kid who couldn't skate, what do you do, right? So I was a goalie, and I loved it. I loved playing goal. I wasn't particularly good at it. I mean, I always made the A team in my hometown, but it's, you know, it was me or the other guy. So it was a small town. Low bar.
Do you have an elite prospects page? That's the real question.
I do not.
Okay, we might, if you can.
I don't think you can let in eight goals a game at the bantam level and expect a lot of heat from the scouts.
We'll have to get you an elite prospects page. We know the guy who's.
You can work that out.
Yeah, we'll work that out for you. But, okay, so you became a Canucks fan and you've got this account.
Well, I'll tell you, here's the thing. I came to town, so I moved here in 1993. Mm hmm. So that was a bit of a run, 93-94 mm-hmm. season. So the year that I landed in Vancouver, which I didn't plan to move here, I just came here to do some stand-up shows. I had a bunch of stand-up shows lined up in Vancouver and over on the island and up in the Okanagan. And I thought to myself, I'm going to hang out here for a few months because I had some friends who lived here. And I never spent time in Vancouver. I'd always fly in and play a club and fly out. And it's like, man, it looks beautiful, you know, but you don't get a chance to see the city. So I thought, here's my chance to hang out in Vancouver for a while. I figured I'd hang out 2, maybe 3 months. I got an apartment in the West End that you could rent month by month without signing a lease. And I was in that apartment for 10 years.
Wow.
And
month by month.
I just never felt like I wanted to be anywhere else. So pretty within short order of me being here, I felt like this was going to be the place where I live my life. This was going to be home base for my life. And it was, like I said, 93, 94, that season, you know, took a run for the cup. It was a wild time, and it was pretty hard not to get on board. Pretty hard not to get swept up. But I didn't realize that I was actually becoming a Canucks fan until I was on the road. I guess it'd probably be the next season. I was on the road with another comic, a buddy of mine, Jamie Hutchinson, who's a big Leafs fan. And we used to watch Leafs games together. And we were on the road in Kelowna. And we were in my hotel room because we were watching Hockey Night in Canada. And it was the Canucks and the Leafs playing. And the Canucks scored first and I cheered. And it was kind of I was like, oh, that surprised me. I guess this is my team. And I was just, I was on board from that moment on.
Wow. Do you remember who scored the goal?
No, I don't, because I was so befuddled and bemused by what had just happened.
I wonder how different it would have been if they didn't go on a Stanley Cup run, because that has to draw in the whole city, right? Like, yeah. What was that like, just to kind of, especially as you're getting used to a new city here and you're thinking, you know, maybe this is a spot that you want to be month to month, but like the Canucks, they absolutely draw you in. Like, what is it like at the time, like, in 93, 94, when they're going on that run in the playoffs and it's getting deeper and deeper, and then you get to the chance to see Stanley Cup finals. Like, what was it like becoming a fan at the time there, or at least changing your alliance, I guess? I don't know. You know, I think it's a good choice jumping away from the Leafs. Like, you did, you were ahead of the times there with playoff wins. So,
yeah, it's like I said, for me, it wasn't like I had to abandon some lifelong. No, I always loved to watch hockey. I played hockey, and I loved to watch our senior men's team, the Tisdale Ramblers, and the Tisdale Trojans, who went on to win the Air Canada Cup, the midget tournament. So I just loved to watch hockey, and I watched Hockey Night in Canada. Whoever came down the pike, I was on board. And so, I kind of had an affinity for Toronto because of Mike Pometier and just the fact that they were the regular team on And so it wasn't hard for me to, I didn't have to, you know, throw away lifelong love of any specific team.
Right.
I kind of feel like the Canucks is the first time that I really have a team that is my team. Like, this is, and I've lived here now almost 30 years, like I said. So it's, and I do fundraising events with the Canucks, and I do events with them and do stand up at some of their fundraising shows and things like that. So it's pretty easy to get dialed in.
I got to ask, like, so 10 years into being a fan, you get the West Coast Express era, the era that I grew up with and the era that I absolutely loved. And at the time, I'm sure you've been able to see how that kind of developed, the trades that made it happen. What are your memories of just the West Coast Express?
I remember thinking that they should be better. I remember thinking that, like, you look at some of the talent that's on the ice, and they didn't, I've always felt like they didn't go far enough. I don't know what the reason for that was, but I always felt at the start of every season going in, you know, with that gang, with that crew,
yeah,
that they should be going farther than they were.
No, I agree. I think they could use a Thatcher Demko back then, probably, too.
I wish I could remember it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we always talk about how my like, real knowledge of the Canucks started in 2011. Like, that was when it started, because I was 11 years old at the time.
Well, I mean, that's next. We got to ask you, but, like, that's the next era there at that point in 2011, watching that team come together. And that's when, you know, social media is just kind of starting to crank up at the time. Yeah. And what everything that happened in 2011 was so incredible. I remember the best birthday gift I've ever gotten in my life was getting tickets to game 7 against the Blackhawks, and, you know, being 18 at the time and not getting ID'd at the bar, and everything was going perfect for the night. And then the Canucks, I feel like they're going to throw it away. They win it overtime, just like the absolute perfect night. Yeah. What do you remember from that night? One of, for me, it's the best moment in Canucks history, because I was there. I was a little biased probably about it, but what do you remember from those series and that whole playoff run?
Well, that particular game, I was at home watching on TV, and it was a rare game that my wife was watching with me. Mm. She's not a big hockey fan. She's born and raised Vancouver, but she was never a big hockey fan. But on those times, you know, the deeper we get into a playoff run, the more she starts to, like, how are we doing, and come snooping around. So game 7 against the Hawks, especially, who had, eaten their lunch a few times in the past. And I remember her being beside me. We were in the basement where I had the big screen TV in our old house. And, just lost my marbles, right? And I remember my dog barking at me because he didn't know what was happening. I was screaming. And yeah, it was fun. Oh, the other thing I remember about that too, that I thought was funny, because I kind of, you know, we celebrate for 30 seconds or so, and then to kind of encapsulate the moment, I take a picture of myself in front of the with the TV behind me, right, like a selfie.
Yeah.
And it's like, woohoo, you know, Canucks win. And I remember somebody on Twitter replying, because this is so perfectly Twitter, somebody like saying, yeah, nice try. It's clearly they've already scored the goal. You're not in the moment because of the... And I was like, who said I was in the moment? What are you... It just cracked me up.
It's that so, Canucks so fan Twitter. Was on the way to the bank to complain about yeah. parking.
Yeah.
But, gotta love that about Twitter.
But okay. that the thing I remember... You know, I shouldn't say the thing I remember about that team, but they were so good. I remember my brother, Lloyd, who lives in Calgary, who's a Flames fan. I remember Lloyd saying to me that year, because we always text back and forth when the games are on, and especially when the Flames and the Canucks are playing against each other. But I remember him saying to me that year, he said, you know, it's so frustrating about the Canucks is it just seems like they can beat you whenever they want. It seems like... If they're down by two and there's 3 minutes left, they look up at the clock and go, oh, hang on, we need three goals. And they yeah. just go out and get three goals. And he said, this drives me crazy. And I also remember at the start of that year being in the airport because I travel a lot. I'm seeing going by a magazine stand or like a you know bookstore that had a magazine stand. And Hockey News was on the cover and had Luongo. And I remember it said, can anybody stop the Canucks? We were going into the season. I was like, oh, I like how that sounds.
Yeah.
And almost nobody could.
Nobody could. Like, that's the thing about the 2011 run. Literally nobody could, and then everything that happened in the final happened, and then all of a sudden the Boston Bruins and Tim Thomas could shut them down. But, you know, President's Trophy winners, like, that team was the team to get it done. So I'll ask you this, Brent, because, you know, we've taken you through all the disappointing eras that have ended in disappointment. Like, the great teams... that have ended in nothing. Like, this city has not seen a Stanley Cup. So I'll ask you this. Your faith level in this, not only core, the Elias Pettersons, the Quinn Hughes, the Thatcher Demkos, you've already talked about Demko, but...
Which Elias Pettersson are we talking about?
Oh, we're talking about the first one.
Oh, the cagey veteran.
Yeah. Yes, not Reed PD, as we call him, but...
I like how old PD decided to go with the shaved head, like, once he saw...
Yes.
New, like, I we saw...
See, I'll put it out here. My nickname for the new kid is Biggie. Because we got little E and Big E.
Yeah.
But it's just Biggie, like Biggie Smalls. Yeah, okay. Biggie.
I like that.
But I'm going to have a hard time not calling him Todd, because he looks so much like a guy I went to high school with named Todd. it's like when we drafted him and his picture came out, I took a picture and sent it to a friend of mine I went to school with. I go, holy hell, we just drafted 1983 Todd Arneson.
I've been trying to get the... Like, so he wore 32 at development camp, and it's like, how did no one tell him not to wear 42? Like,
yeah.
He would have been EP 42. Like, yeah. Nobody, like, come on. Nobody was thinking
missed
that.
Opportunity.
Big time.
I like what he said. Somebody, I can't remember, somebody was interviewing him quickly, and they said something about how are you going to put the names on the back of the jerseys, you know, what's going to be printed. And he said, I think what we'll do is whatever he wants.
That's the right answer.
It's like that's the perfect attitude.
He's a smart kid. I guess, Brent, I'll ask you about just the new players coming in. Which one excites you the most? Like Mikheyev, we have Kuzmenko come in. You can even mention like Spencer Martin will now be the backup. I know we mentioned Jack Rathbone. There's not much else on the defense, but like out of I guess like the two Russian forwards, which one kind of excites you a little bit here? There's a mystery to Kuzmenko a little bit. Mikheyev absolutely flies.
That's part of it. I think that's. For me, I would have to say my interest is mostly in, and I'm on board both. I'm very interested to see how both of them play here, and I love Mikheyev's speed. I love that footage that they showed of the foot race with him and McDavid to the puck. And he beats him to the puck, gets it first, and then shoves him against the wall.
Yeah,
that's a good combination. But I'm probably most interested. I feel because Mikheyev is a bit more of a known entity, and it's just the mystery of Kuzmenko. The Cruz, that's my nickname for him.
The Cruz, okay.
I'm here to nickname all the guys.
Yeah.
Okay.
I actually did that for the Canucks 1 year at one of the events I went through. I gave them all nicknames.
Really?
I was like, here's the problem with hockey today, lousy nicknames. We used to have great nicknames, right? Suitcase, Cheech, you know, Juice. We had good nicknames. So I went through and I gave them all... new nicknames. And one of them stuck for a while.
Okay, which one?
Tyler Myers. I gave him the nickname Dunk. because you know he can't.
Right? Oh my gosh, that's where that came from.
And you'd hear people, dunk.
We hear the players say it.
I gave the nickname for JT Miller. I gave the nickname Phyllis because from my background in comedy, I'm a big fan of Phyllis Diller, and Phyllis Diller Miller just seems like a good rolls off the tongue. So I gave him the name Phyllis Diller Miller. And so that didn't stick. But he did say to me later at an event, he came up to me and he said, you know, nobody calls me Phyllis, but we have a set power play. One of the plays that we do as a set power play piece is something he brought with him from college and introduced to the team, and they use it. And he said we didn't have a name for it, so we call it Phyllis.
Well, there you go.
So they'll line up
so
with the Phyllis.
So it did stick to an extent.
Just not to a human.
That's amazing.
Now, I cut you off. You were going to ask me something, and I cut you off.
Well, we can get to it because, you know, he had a good question there about the free agents. But what I wanted to get to is, you know, we talked about all the disappointing errors. So we've talked about this core a little bit. Is this the one to get it done? Is this management regime as well the one to get it done in your mind?
Yeah, I really think it is. And, you know, I am notorious. Is that the right word? I'm notoriously optimistic. I'm gung-ho about the Canucks, and I'm always like, probably more optimistic than is warranted at times. But I just kind of got to balance things out. And so, but I do feel like if you look at first of all, when's the last time we had 330 goal scorers?
Yeah.
Right? I think it was like the West Coast Express era, right? So we have some talent, and it seems like we're adding to that nicely. If you look at, I think Bo Horvat is a fantastic captain. I think he's a fantastic all-around player, and I think he's the type of guy you want wearing the C. And then we got these young studs that play so well, just play at a really high level with Hughes and Petey and Besser, too. Besser is, I think, he's a better two-way player than he gets credit for. Mm-hmm. And when you watch him put the puck in the net, I always remember that there was that one game when we were playing the Canadians and everybody got squeezed over into the boards for some reason, and Besser just parked out front on the off chance that the puck came to him, and it did. And it was like an old Western movie. It was gunslinger. It was like maybe the best goalie in the league and this sniper, and they just squared off. And Price came out, challenged him, got set. And it's like Besser just let him get set. It was like, are you ready? Boom. Just a wrist shot over his shoulder.
Yeah.
So I think we have as good a core, like a core group of star players as a lot of teams that have won the cup. And then it's just kind of, and then we got Demko, who can steal games. You're not going to win the cup unless you have a goalie that steals games, where you win games you got no business winning, not only through the season, but through the playoffs. You have to win games you shouldn't win. And we got that in him. And then you got Boudreau, who I think can navigate the waters really, really well. So I think the next 3 years is going to be very fun and interesting.
Brent, give me a line you want to see next year, because there's so much you could see. Like, there's so many trios you can put together,
I've always group. Want. I've always like. I like Petey on the wing. I know statistically, there's more evidence that he's more effective down the middle. But I like Horvat centering Besser and Petey. I just like loading up some guns.
I like that idea a lot. One thing that we've kind of thrown around is, you know, they've got the three Russians now. Like, what are the chances that we see, you know, Podkolzin alongside Kuzmenko or Mikheyev? Because I'd really like that, especially if they're splitting up, you know, if they do go the route of splitting up Patterson, Horvat, and Miller. You've got three lines that can score. Like, you've got the wingers now to do it, I'd say. So, like, where are your expectations, I guess, for Vasily Podkolzin in particular next year? Like, what did you think of him as a rookie? Is he ready to take that next step into being like a consistent top six contributor?
I think he is. I think we watched him become an NHL player in front of our very eyes. You know, and I think he took a little bit longer than a lot of people hoped or wanted. I think a lot of people just wanted him to come in this big, strong, skilled Russian kid. I think a lot of people, well, I shouldn't say a lot of people, but I mean, some people were probably unfairly projecting a bit too much Ovechkin in. on him, right? They were like, oh, he's like Ovechkin. I heard that from a few people. I was like, well. But I think what we watched this kid learn the game and get confident. And I feel like in the second half, I mean, he blossomed under Boudreau. I think a lot of guys found their game again under Boudreau. And I think Podkolzin kind of became an NHL player. I don't know what Boudreau said to him, took him aside, had a few conversations, and he instilled some confidence in him that I think was missing.
I completely agree with you. I think that's all it was. It was just like, I think the fact that you brought up Ovechkin, like that's, Boudreau's the guy who helped Ovechkin find that in the NHL. I think Russians really, I think that's why, I think it's a big reason why Kuzmenko actually maybe chose Vancouver was Bruce Boudreau. Like the fact that he drove to meet him in Michigan, the fact that he was on all the phone calls with Kuzmenko, like
Mikheyev telling him Vancouver's a great place.
Exactly. And, you know, Podkolzin mentioned that, you know, before he even signed, Podkolzin had a good conversation with Kuzmenko. He used to play with them in the same KHL team. They weren't line mates, as you've been telling everyone.
Yeah, I keep saying, I was like, yeah, they played together. No, they played together one game.
Yeah, Podkolzin didn't get a lot of minutes in the KHL. Kuzmenko did. But, yeah, just, it's going to be interesting to watch that. And I think something that you said off the top was so important about, like, how a coach, I mean, everyone who's in the NHL is a highly skilled hockey player. And when you're, you know, getting paid millions of dollars to do it as well, you're not a guy who's like a bottom feeder in a lineup. You're an impact player. But it's been really great to see how Bruce Boudreau has been able to kind of navigate using the skill. And I think that's a big difference that we saw from the past, where it just feels like Boudreau has a sense of where the players themselves feel the most comfortable, and he's been able to put them in that spot. That's why I think that, I don't know if the Canucks are a 120, 110 point team, whatever the pace was that they set last year, but you have to be more confident this year going into this season than you were last year. With everything that you saw at the end of last year, there's just a confidence in me that this team, like, how confident were we that they were a playoff team last year?
Yeah,
going into the season, we felt pretty confident about it. We thought that, yeah, it was a lot, and, you know, looking back, maybe the OEL trade might have been a little bit of a mistake at the time, but you were getting a better team. This year, you're still getting a better team, it feels like, Nick. Like, going into it, you're obviously going to have to rely on Demko a ton, but how do you feel about the Canucks being a playoff team this year, especially after what we've seen the last 2 years, where big disappointments, I think. I mean, obviously, the Canadian division was, that was a tough year to watch for a lot of that. Last year, I mean, the push was so much fun. But this year, like, there has to be a confidence. How do you think the Canucks can build off of what they did to finish last year?
Yeah, I feel like if we can, I doubt that we're going to match the pace that we had in the second half. But if you look at the fact that we just missed by basically playing half a season, and we almost made the playoffs, and we would have if there wasn't, you know, some other teams that had a really good stretch. If you extrapolate over the course of the season, if we only get, you know, if we do a third as well as we did in the second half, but over the course of the whole season,
right,
we're a playoff team. And, you know, I think we got, like I said, a cagey dude behind the bench that can get people motivated in the right way. And he's a good fluid coach. He makes changes on the fly well. He adapts. He adapts and overcomes like a Marine. So I'm on board. I think the pieces, a lot of the pieces of the puzzle are there. Hot goalie that can steal games. KG, veteran coach that the players love to play for. You got a horse wearing the C. You got some snipers that can just do things that people shouldn't be able to do. So I think the core is there. And I think, like I said, if we play 75% as well as we did in the second half, but we play that good through the season, we'll be a playoff team.
All right, I just got one last question then. I don't know how many you got. You got a list over there. This is my final one. I just want to know your favorite moment in arena that you've ever had. As a fan of the Vancouver Canucks, being in the arena, what's your favorite moment that you've had in person?
It ended up getting written about in the province newspaper at the time. So my wife got me an 11-game ice pack. They used to sell them. So instead of a season ticket, you get the 11-game ice pack. And she got it kind of late in the year, and there was only seats, the very last seats, as high as you can get.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So I was way at the back against the concrete, but it's fantastic. You're up high, you can see the play develop. And so I was at one of the games, and there was a guy a few rows down who was inebriated. He was gooned. And I can't remember what the joke was. You'd think I'd remember his stupid joke, because all he kept saying this joke, the same joke, 80, 90 times, 100 times, 160 times. And finally, I just lost it on the guy. I just stood up and just unloaded on him like I would a heckler in a comedy club. And got a tremendous round from the people sitting around me. And anyway, somebody who wrote for the province was there and saw it and wrote it up. About how I snapped and lost. And when I first read it, I thought, oh, this is going to be bad, because I, you know, I was using all manner of colorful language on the guy. And so I thought, uh-oh, this is like one of those TMZ moments. Yeah. But it was written up actually kind of, you know, showed me in a good light. That's probably one of my favorite in-moment games. And also, Ryan Kessler hat trick, I lost my favorite Canucks hat. I had to throw it over the glass.
Did they not give them back then? What the heck? They give them back now. If you throw your hat over, they say, go to guest services at this section, get your hat back.
Well, I like what some... Have you seen what like some people do? They like compress, like different arenas do different things with them.
Really?
And like I've seen like art pieces come out. They put them in, they put that little clear gel, and it turns into like a cube of the hats. That's a cool one. And then it's like this guy's hat trick from whatever day here.
Should give it to the player.
Yeah.
Put this in your yard.
You got to deal with this now.
Yeah, the statue. I remember Ray Ferraro talking about how they used to give them the hats. Like, they would round them up and give them to the players. Like, I don't want these. What am I going to do with these? Put them in a statue. That's what Ray Ferraro wanted. Okay, a couple more things that I wanted to get to. I guess the first one. Are you surprised that JT Miller hasn't been traded yet?
Yeah, I am. You know, and I'll be the first to admit, and I kind of alluded to this a couple times already, that, you know, the business side of this game is so outside of my scope. Like, I'm a business guy and I run businesses, but there's so much to hockey that I don't even try to figure out the business side of it. But I thought, especially the way all the experts were talking, and, you know, I mean, I understood the notion of trading this guy while the getting's good, like his value is as high now as it's probably ever going to be. Although I don't think it's going to drop off tremendously. And I don't think, like, if you're, he might not get 99 points, but if you got 89 points, I don't think that's a big drop off in terms of your market value. But in answer to your question, yeah, I thought it would have happened by now. But this is one of those situations where my head and my heart argue, because I just want to see him remain a Canuck. I want to watch games where he's on my team.
Yeah.
And so the notion of trading him, I guess, makes sense from a dollars and cents, nuts and bolts, corn and gravy standpoint. But as just a guy who likes to watch your team, I really want him to be on the team.
Yeah,
I want Phyllis on the team.
We're going to try to make Phyllis stick. I think we'll have to start writing that in all of our articles.
I gave Horvat the nickname Horse. This was my favorite joke from that run. I said we got to call him Horse because he, first of all, there's a cartoon, Bojack Horseman, right?
Yep.
So Bojack Horvat just makes sense.
Yep.
He's big, he's strong, he's fast, he works hard, he loves apples. That was my favorite joke of the day. And I said to Travis Green, who's the coach at the time, I said, Green, you can keep that theme going too. If Bo has a good shift, he comes back to the bench, you give him a sugar cube. Keep it going. A little incentive.
Fantastic. Okay. So I need to ask you. I should have prepped you for this. I'm putting you on the spot here. I'm just hoping you have a good Dog the Bounty Hunter story for us.
I do.
Please tell it.
Why are you asking about Dog the Bounty Hunter?
Because the cameo.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Because I was wondering, like, where does he know we had a cameo? Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I got to be careful not to slander anybody. But here's, I think I'm legally covered if I just say this is my opinion. He and his wife, God rest her, they seemed to me to be full-on legitimately coconuts. Like, they rolled into, so it started with our transport team went to pick them up at the airport. They were flying in, and they came off the plane in a shouting match with Air Canada people. They were banned. They as they arrived in Regina, Saskatchewan, they were banned from flying Air Canada anymore. Gosh. And the party continued. It was, and they were fighting amongst themselves. We were waiting to shoot the scene that they were going to be in, and they were on the other side. I don't know if they thought they were in another room, you know, just the other side of a fake wall that we have in the studio. And they're screaming at each other, and we kept, our AD kept going in to kind of try, because we're running late now, to break it up. And they'd yell at him, and he'd come scurrying back. don't send me in there again. But yeah, I'll say, in my opinion, they were not wired upright.
You don't say.
They were problematic.
So shooting the scenes itself, how was that experience?
Well, that was all right. I think the scene came off good. It was a little fantasy sequence. See, we found out that they were going to be in Regina for some security conference. And so we thought, well, let's come up with an idea for a cameo featuring them, and we'll run it by them. And if they want to play ball, that'll be a fun cameo to do. So I came up with this idea that Brent has a little fantasy about being on the lam, and they track him down. Because that was the good thing about Corner Gas, is that we kind of had this framework built in where you could pop out of reality and have a little, you could see what somebody's thinking. Mm-hmm. And so that allowed us to do some pretty haywire jokes that we couldn't do without fracturing our reality. But, you know, it was always a fantasy pop out. And so they just come into the Ruby and bust me, basically. And that was all good. That came off without a hitch. You know, the guy knows how to use handcuffs. I'll give him that.
Fantastic.
That actually, I do have a Corner Guys question too before we wrap. Making the switch to animated, like, what was that like? What were the easier parts of doing that? Like, a whole change, I'm sure you get like a lot more creativity and, you know, things like that, like making a cut scene to something else. Like, when animated, it's got to be easier. How different was it for you being like the creator, the mind behind everything, going from in person live action to switching to animated? Like, what were some of the pros and cons?
Yeah, like you said, we were able to take advantage of that built-in system that we had, the built-in device where we could pop out and see fantasies. And we were able to take that a little farther than we could in real life, because there's always, you know, there's budgetary issues. And so actually, when we were first convincing the network, because the way it came about was we did the series, 107 episodes of the live-action series. Then we took a break for 5 years, and we came back for the movie. Mm. And in my mind, that was going to be the cherry on top. We're going to finish it off with a theatrical feature film. But the problem was, it did so well, if that's a problem. It was like the most watched thing of the year, and it was selling out theaters. Yeah. My brother called me, I can't get into your stupid movie. It was like physically selling out theaters, and Cineplex called up the network and asked if they could have another week with it in theaters, that kind of thing. So it did way better than any of us expected. And we expected it to do well, but it still did better. And so that made the network call up and say, you know, there's clearly still an appetite for these people in this little town. You want to do more episodes. But, you know, I was getting older, and it just kind of felt like there's no reason to go back and do more of the same. But at the same time, you still like to have a gig, right? So we said, if we were going to do something, what could we do to make it different, but still give people what they like. Mm-hmm. And I have a history in illustration and cartooning, and I was going to study animation after high school. I went to Sheridan College in Oakville to study animation, but I quit after, I think, 4 days. But so it was an easy leap for me to say, well, what if we tried animating? But the thing is, you don't know whether it's going to work or not, right?
Right.
So we landed upon the genius idea of, let's do a 3-minute demo and just see how it feels. Mm. If it feels good, we'll move forward. If it doesn't, we'll pull the plug and just wrap it up.
Yeah.
And so we created this 3-minute demo that really showed what we could do. I wrote a scene where it was kind of a fantasy thing, like a post-apocalyptic. In the episode, Brent has forgotten to order gas for the pump, so the town is dry for a couple days. And Oscar imagines like a post-apocalyptic Mad Max society, you know. And you know, we flash to that, the gas station's in the middle of the desert, you're surrounded in barbed wire and tires, and Brent's all kind of Mad Maxy, and all these, you know, post-apocalyptic warriors roll over in their farm equipment / dune buggy war vessels. And that showed the network is like, see what we could do that we couldn't do.
Yeah.
Because one of the things was, why animate? And that showed why I animate, and then the rest of it just felt right. It all felt good. It felt like just another episode. And we worked with I worked with a Vancouver animator named Josh Mepham. He designed the characters so that they looked like the Corner Gas people.
Yeah.
And it just felt right, and so we dove in. And the response from people was great.
I mean, and just watching it, like, it's crazy how far animation has come. And I get it, it's 2022. You can do pretty much anything, but just like, I don't know, just like seeing little movements, like you guys, I think, you know, props to your animation department and what they were able to do with things, because everything looked and felt very similar. Yeah. And a lot of even just like little how the shoulders would move, arms. Yeah. Like it was pretty wild to see.
Yeah, they studied the animators. There was animated with a company in Toronto called Smiley Guy Studios, and the animators. Yeah, we just provided them with clips of each of the characters and to learn their mannerisms and their facial expressions and how they respond to things. And yeah, they're an amazing group there at Smiley Guy.
Okay, before we wrap up here, I want to ask you about the book. Huge, dropping fall 2023. Like you said before we went on air, it's because it's Faber's wedding present and you're bringing it to the wedding.
Big release date at the wedding.
The publisher wants to release it now. I said we got to hold off to Faber's wedding.
Yeah, I just proposed. I wouldn't have gotten engaged if it wasn't for the book. So,
yeah, it's just, I've always wanted to write a novel. And when we got shut down with the pandemic, I thought, if not now, when? And so I started writing, and I had this idea for a while. It's based on, it's not a comedy. It's a dark psychological thriller. So it's not a comedy, but the backdrop of it is comedy. It's three comedians. The fast pitch for it is three comedians go on the road in a van. Two of them do not have a disturbing capacity for violence. Mm. So one of the three is, it's a bad guy to be on the road with. And it's kind of based on the notion that when I first started doing stand-up, you get just thrown in with somebody you don't know. And 99% of the time, it's great. Somebody you become fast friends with, you have a few laughs with. But every so often, you're on the road with somebody, and you're just like, if this guy decides to kill me out here in the middle of Manitoba, there's a lot of places to hide my body. And it just seemed like a potentially good, creepy story. And so that's what I wrote. And the response from people has been really, really good. And I apparently have written a good scary book.
Wow. Fantastic.
That's what I like to read. I like thrillers and horror books.
Yeah. Stephen King fan?
Yeah.
There you go. I'm very excited to read it because, like you, I also really enjoy that genre.
I find it interesting that, Jordan Peele's an example, a comedian who's been able to, move into thrillers and have a ton of success. Is there something about that for comedians that, you want to just give it a shot or what?
I've always said, because people are surprised, and I've always said comedy, terror, they're not that different. they're very close cousins. It's a thin wall between comedy and terror. It's a very thin wall between somebody slapping you in the back or punching you in the face. It's like a very little subtle gesture difference can make all the difference in the world. But yeah, if any of your listeners are on board, if they want to get advanced information about the book, I have a little bulletin newsletter. It's just called BB Bulletins. You can just go to my website, brentbutt.com, sign up for the bulletins, and the people that are signed up for that will get advance. They'll probably read the first chapter before anybody else. They'll see the book cover before anybody else, those kind of things. So go to my website, brentbutt.com, sign up for the bulletins.
Was it something that you were nervous getting into? Or have you done anything away from comedy that much? Just this is a huge project. Hard was it at times?
Enjoyed it. I didn't know how hard it was going to be going into it. And it was, it's a big project to sit down and write a novel. It's a lot of work. But as a guy who spent the last, 25 years or so writing scripts for comedy, for TV and film, and scripts are very kind of structured and they're time, specific. You got to have a full 31 pages, not 31 and a half, that kind of thing. And, things are expected to happen by a certain page count. Whereas a novel, I said to my literary agent, I said, I felt like I was a horse that got let out of the pen and just go run and see what you find, And I loved it. I got up at 5 or 6 every morning and just started hammering away. I really loved the process, so much so that I've started writing my second book now.
Fantastic. Can you share anything about the second book yet?
Not really. Too early in the day. I don't want to muddy the water.
That is very fair.
We got to get huge out into the world.
We'll announce it at the wedding. We'll let you know what the deal is.
We'll let you know when I get married, and then you can drop that one. All right. Well, we'll close it out there. Brent, thank you so much for joining us. For my co-host, Chris Faber, our thanks again to Brent Butt for joining us on this episode of the Canucks Conversation.
Thanks for listening to Canucks Conversation, delivered by DoorDash. Hit the subscribe button to never miss an episode.
How about keep it to a thank you, Jim? Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The playoffs are near and we have an army. Nation Gear is ready to gear you up for Vancouver's playoff run. Rep your favorite team as they battle for the cup. Shop the exclusive We Have an Army playoff tee and more at nationgear.ca.